For my reflection on the year 1893, I would have travelled out from Clonmel to the church at Tullamele in Knocklofty. A small church, usually used but once a month, but with its own atmosphere and affectionate worshippers. And I always think in Tullamele that in that part of the diocese there is the amazing view of the Shore Valley in all its meandering beauty on the Tipperary-Waterford boundary. And where one, when one wants things to do and perhaps needs time for meditation, for peace, for beauty, other than just in a church building, I've come to discover in that part of County Tipperary that the Shore Blue Way is one of the delightful ways to find physical exercise and a certain spiritual refreshment. So we pray for those who live in the Valley of the Shore. And we think of events of 1893. I was talking in the last reflection of new voices emerging, not least in the Church of Ireland, indicating a new trajectory of Irish nationalism and identity after the fall of Parnell. I mentioned Douglas Hyde, Douglas the Heather, the last time, and in this particular year he publishes Aron Gro Huig a Connacht, The Love Songs of Connacht. For Hyde, at that stage of his life, everything really had to be in Irish. Nothing else was an authentic manifestation of identity. He was passionate about what he viewed as de-Anglicisation. But for other, nevertheless somewhat kindred spirits, the same Celtic atmosphere and distinctiveness could be captured in English before it was too late, before it was lost. Indeed, the Celtic voices of that period often wrote in English and wrote distinctively in English and could not have written in Irish and became some of the great voices of English language literature. And of course, this brings us inevitably to the greatest of them all, W.B. Yeats. We mention him now for the first time and his production in 1893 of The Celtic Twilight. The Church of Ireland Anglican leadership of this new movement of cultural separatism in music and poetry and theatre, it raised questions about Irish and indeed Church of Ireland identity, which had previously been probably very focused on the link with Britain, despite other voices in the, particularly the later 18th century, and on the whole British parliamentary process as also a way forward for Ireland. Now a new kind of Anglican nationalism emerged within the many voices that make up Church of Ireland and Irish identity. And I suppose if I were to be personal and honest, I come myself of an Anglican nationalist tradition. Hyde and Yeats were the heroes of my youth. My father, who was a clergyman, had Yeats as a parishioner in his parish in Dublin when he was a curate. And so I grew up in an atmosphere, a rectory, indeed like Hyde, where love of the language was encouraged and where the label of patriot was never to be ceded to any other religious group over and above the Church of Ireland, and where being Church of Ireland was seen almost as an optimum way to be Irish, and where, frankly, my father, and I mentioned that he knew Yeats as a parishioner in his own formative years of ministry, my father represented within himself certain paradoxes of Irish identity. He loved his annual visit to London, which he seemed to know like the back of his hand. His knowledge of its theatres and cultural venues and museums was extensive, and yet he had an almost pathological fear that anyone would ever think that he was British. And I say that with respect, great respect to our nearest neighbours. So it was that the Celtic Revival, to call it that, and those whose identity kind of derives from all that that spawned. It produced interesting fault lines in the Church of Ireland itself about loyalty and identity, and we live with them fascinatingly still.